And Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2330 7th Avenue in Regina. Go see Alan Mann, Joe Cardiff, and the great gang over there. They're doing superb work in the auto body industry. And also Wheel Estate, Canada's most trusted peer-to-peer trailer sharing marketplace. They officially connect people who would like to rent a travel trailer with owners whose trailer would otherwise go unused, backing each reservation with their $1 million insurance policy. Go check out their website, wheelestate.ca. All right, in conversation with former CFL great Paul McCallum. Paul, does that still sound weird when somebody says that to you?
It sounds a little bit weird, actually. I mean, it feels like yesterday I was still, working hard to get a job.
Yeah. Is it hard to get over playing football? Like, a lot of guys have a tough time transitioning. I know we'll get to what you're doing now, but is it you know, when you spend a good chunk of your adult life kicking footballs for a living, playing pro sports, getting paid for it, is it tough to remove yourself from that?
It is, actually. I mean, you know, every year, I would have a job, whether I was working with Sask Energy or I was working with Colliers International. You would end the season and then you'd transfer from one occupation to the next, and then, you know, getting ready for the season. So I had that transition happen every year, but it is a difficult thing to do. It's hard to find a job where you can emulate the ups and downs from a week to week for all the work that you put in. You know, most jobs, the sort of reaping the benefits of your hard work doesn't happen that quickly. Mm. So it is a big change, yes.
You know, do you miss the game?
I do. I mean, I've tried to stay away just to, transition and 'cause I'm doing lots of different things. It's one of those things, you know, change in life is good, and I'll get back to, helping some kickers when I can. But it's a hard thing to be doing it for so long and then just not do it at all.
That's what I was going to ask you before we get to what you're doing now, Paul. Mark McLaughlin, I just talked to him recently. He's working here in the government in Saskatchewan, but he's now signed on as the U of R Rams place kicking coach. Is that something you'd look at doing down the road, you know, helping out the youngsters of, the next generation, you know, former Surrey Ram, Paul McCallum, then goes to the CFL. Would you like to do that one day?
You know, I've actually kicked it around. I was joking around with some of the guys saying that I'd like to be a special teams coach, kicker, special teams coach. I really enjoyed that aspect of the game, the kicking game, working on weaknesses of other teams and exploiting the other teams and things like that. So I think, you know, like I said, I'd like to get back into it. When that happens, don't know. But, yeah, absolutely. Kicking coach, special teams coach, it'd be fun.
What rule would you like to change as it relates to kicking? I'll give you two options, okay? You can get rid of the 5-yard the no yards, or you can get rid of the rouge. Which one would you get rid of if you were commissioner for the day?
That's a tough one, because the rouge, you've got the goalpost at the front of the it just adds a whole new dimension and strategy of the game. So it's not so much for me, you know, if you want to take away the point,
yeah.
I get that aspect people think about, but it's a strategy, you know. Do you punt it through the end zone during the course of the game and setting up for different things, plays and onside kicks? And so from one aspect, yeah, I mean, that would make sense. You get rid of it when you miss. But there again, it's just another element to the game that makes it different.
Yeah, and you like do you like the no yards? Because it does encourage the return game, I guess.
I do. I like the no yards. One rule, and I don't know if many people think about this, the one rule that I don't like is on a kickoff, if the kicker kicks the ball and, you know, they're going for the corner and it bounces on the ground and then all of a sudden it rolls and then it goes out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the returners had an opportunity to pick it up, but they just let it go. I don't think that should be a penalty. I think that if the returner can play it, then I think that it shouldn't be a penalty when the ball goes out of bounds on a kickoff.
That's a good point. Hey, on that note, the NFL is looking, they're talking about getting rid of the kickoffs. Getting rid of the kickoffs altogether, or at least limiting the run-up for the guys who are behind you running up and getting that running start. What do you think of either the elimination or tinkering with the kickoff rule?
No, I mean, as far as I know right now, it is limited. I think they can only have a 5-yard run right now in the NFL, if I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
And I think that's all right. I mean, I think the front line guys can engage or slow them down a little bit. It all adds to the strategy. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't think so. The NFL has been playing with that rule forever. They move the kickoff up, they move it back, they make the balls harder to kick through the end zone. It's football. I mean, yeah, you want to make it as safe as you can, but the kickoff, no. Make them line up 5 yards, and you can do things to maybe help with a little bit of safety. But I'm a big proponent for having the whole practicing without a helmet idea. I mean, I think watching rugby, they had rugby sevens here, mm-hmm. and watching these guys hit and tackle without helmets on, and sure, there's occasionally you have an accident with a guy, they knock heads. But it's unlike football where they use helmets as a weapon. Mm-hmm. So, as far as looking at safety rules, if you can practice without a helmet because you're headbutting people and stuff like that, you're not going to be doing that. And you're going to learn how to practice and tackle properly. Like, you have to form tackle in rugby instead of hitting people. Mm-hmm. You know, that Minnesota-New Orleans game, if you look at that blown tackle, the guy dropped his head.
Yeah.
Like you're a professional football player, you've got a helmet on, you're dropping your head. That to me would be the number one rule change that I would make, or safety rule that I'd implement in football.
Interesting. Hey, Paul McCallum joining us here. Paul, so in terms of September 28th, 1997, I believe you were 7 of 13 that night in the field goal department, but those stats got changed. What do you remember about September 28th, 1997, lining up as a kicker for the Saskatchewan Roughriders?
I remember going out to practice punting and absolutely just laughing because I would drop the ball and it would, blow 3 yards to the left or the right, or it would spin 3 times before it hit my foot. I had just said to the coach, I said, this isn't going to work. We might as well just line up and kick it out of field goal formation and get it as high, or not as high, but as far and out of bounds as possible. So that's what we did. And then after, I thought to myself, well, they can't possibly, count those as field goals. And they did. I called the league, and I forget the gentleman who I was speaking with, but it was absolutely ridiculous because he said to me, well, what if you kicked it through the end zone? Mm-hmm. And I said to him, well, maybe you didn't check the weather out that day. I think it was like 80-kilometer-an-hour winds or something like that.
Yeah.
I think I kicked a field goal from the extra point going the other way. In warm-up, it was so ridiculous. But anyway, I spoke to Mark McLaughlin about it, and he was really upset because, as a kicker, you're judged on your statistics. So at the end of the year, you can sit there and say, well, I kicked these as punts. Mm-hmm. But, at the end of the day, the general manager would say, well, this is what it says in front of me. So, there's lots of statistics.
Did it affect your bonus? Did it affect anything that way?
I can't remember. I think it may have, but I think the team did say it's, well, we'll just take these off and we'll look at it. So I think I was treated fairly, but I think it did affect.
I think if I saw the stats right, you were behind Sean Fleming that year, but now that there's a change however many years later, 21 years later, you were actually better than Sean Fleming that year. And then your career average goes up obviously as well. What's the, I think you nail a 62-yarder with the Riders, if I'm not mistaken? 60, 62, yeah. What was it? Yeah, 62, wasn't it?
Well, that's another rule that I think Steve is looking at, because I remember when I kicked that, I was probably about 6 inches away from 63 yards.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, what is the rule on this? Not Steve, but the gentleman who was doing stats at the time. He says, no. He says, if you didn't attain the yardage, then it is what it is. And then my last year, actually, I was playing with the Riders, and we lost in BC when Rich Leone kicked a 56 yard field goal.
Right.
And I remember looking at it going, that's closer to the middle or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, and you know, for me, it wasn't so much of, you know, I wanted to have 63. It was whatever you're going to do, let's be consistent.
Yeah.
So anyway, I called Steve and I said, you know, what is the rule? Because I was told the rule is X.
Yeah.
And he says, no, it should be this. And I said, are you sure? Because, you know, this happened to me when I kicked the record long field goal. And he says, no. He says, the rule's always been that way. I says, well, I don't know who I was talking to. And so he says, well, send me the mm-hmm. the picture and the video. And I did that. And he goes, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I was closer to 63 than 62. So I don't know if he's changing that or not. But, I mean, you're opening up Pandora's box with
That's a pro football record, though, isn't it? No? That'd be tied for a pro football record. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it would be, yes.
That's outstanding. Yeah, good thing you can look back on that. Paul, what's the biggest kick you've ever had in your life?
The biggest kick I've had in my life? You know, in 2011, I guess it would be the most memorable one, was we were playing Calgary when I had my streak going of 30 field goals, and I missed one, I don't know what it was, 32 yards or 42, I can't remember. And Taylor's last name, returner, ran it back for a touchdown. And then there was no time left on the clock.
Yeah.
And Wally was going to send out the Hail Mary team, and I just ran out. And he put his hand out to say, no. And then I put my hand back and said, no, I'm kicking it. And so the field goal team went out there, and I kicked his 53-yarder to win it. But it also put the team, I think we clinched first place with that.
Yeah.
To the Grey Cup year. So it was kind of it was the one where I fell back and Jerry's jumped on me.
Yeah.
It was a Cinderella year. And I don't know, that one, there's that kick. And then in 2006, yeah. in the Grey Cup as well.
Yeah. Hey, so lastly, before we get to what you're doing now, when you wave Wally off, you're waving off the greatest all-time coach. You're like, no, coach, I got this. In your mind, you're like, I better make this because I just put it out there now.
Yeah, no. I mean, my arrogance, cockiness, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. That year I was, I had no doubts in my mind. I couldn't miss. It wasn't anything like that. It was like, I was thinking my percentage of hitting this field goal is a heck of a lot better than Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Wally, I mean, let's put it this way. When I waved him off, if he was that sure, he probably would have yelled and screamed to tell me to get the hell off the field. But, you know, but it was, I think I made it by a yard. It's all that matters is you make it. So, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So, two more quick questions for you. I asked McLaughlin this a couple of weeks ago. So, if this Paul McCallum could write a letter to young Paul McCallum coming out of the Surrey Rams into the CFL, what piece of advice would you give him now that you didn't know then?
Oh my goodness, where would I begin? I guess this is going to sound really ironic, but focus better. Don't worry about things you can't control. You know, when I was Saskatchewan, I used to get up every day and I used to look out the window and look at the wind and just worry about how the hell am I going to kick in this?
Yeah.
So, but there again, if I had just worried about kicking the ball and not the wind, I probably would have been a lot better. And just be a little bit more focused on the smaller details as opposed to, you know, like seeing how far I could kick the ball,
mm-hmm.
refining and having more of a focused, consistent purpose when I'm actually practicing. Instead of just kicking the ball, have a purpose for kicking the ball.
Okay, so Paul McCallum, you said at the start of this interview, you can't replace running out onto the field having 30, 40,000 people cheer for you when you're kicking that field goal to keep the streak alive or win the Grey Cup. So what are you doing now to kind of replace the off-field stuff?
Well, I'm working with a company called PhobiSuite. It's a data insights and analytics company here in Vancouver as well. I'm still doing some real estate. I've got a business partner now that's handling the majority of the workload as I'm doing this. And I'm actually working on right now getting to the stadiums with the technology to get to help clubs, help the league get to know their fans better, have a individual interaction with fans from the data that I'd be able to collect in the stadiums and things like that. So that's what I'm working on right now.
That's awesome. Well, hey, maybe there's a future interview right there. We always love talking to you. Thanks for this, Paul.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ballsy.
All right, growing the game now, we're pleased to be joined by four-time champion Tom Sargent, head coach of the Saskatoon Hilltops. Now, four times in a row, I should mention. How's the offseason gone so far, Sarge?
Hey, not too bad, Ballsy. Yeah, no, we're happy where we're at. And, you know, it's like anything. We lost a lot of good ones, but this year we really brought in some good ones. So I really like the, you know, you can have one bad recruit in you. You just can't have two in a row. And we feel we've got a lot of players that are coming in, going to be impacts in the future. And, as I said, working hard with them and loving what we're seeing.
Okay, we'll get to some of the names in a second because I like to highlight names on this podcast. But has it been a pretty nice off season for you? Every time I call you, I know you're a principal of a high school there, but when I'm calling you, you're at a powwow, you're at a golfing event. Like, has the celebrity stock gone up for Tom Sargent?
Oh, not a chance. Hey, I'm pretty simple. Yeah, life gets happening pretty fast, but I can't wait for July to come because then that's when I can just sort of take a breath, focus on me a little bit, and, hey, get ready for a chance to get five in a row. And that's where a lot of our conversations and energy is going. And as I said, we like the team in front of us, so can't wait to put it all together.
Tom, how do you motivate guys? Now, I know you said you lost some guys, but you still have a healthy contingent there. How do you get them motivated and juiced up to win five? Because they do say complacency becomes a problem. And I imagine the more you win, the harder it is to maybe keep focus, or am I wrong with that?
Oh, no, that's so true. Absolutely. And you know, the good thing right now, we're just talking about competition. We need to get some starters in line and get them, you know, understanding how we do business and what their expectations are. So we're doing that. And then the other part, it falls on my coach's hands. You know, they certainly, you know, the harder that they worked and the harder the players are going to work. And we never talk about the past. The past is something you do when you get away from it. We're just living for the present. And with regards to that, it's this 2018 team, their job is just to win one. They're not worried about numbers before, but, you know, behind, it's what's in place right now. So, you know, that's the job of the coaching staff, to keep the focus, keep the humility. I always say, if we can stay humble and healthy, good things are going to happen for the Saskatoon Hilltops.
Okay, so you got Damon Dutton, quarterback out of North Battleford. You got Zach Wolf out of North Battleford, a receiver. You got Presley Peterson, a receiver out of North Battleford. D-line Zachary Weber out of North Battleford. And Nolan, I believe it's Much, out of North Battleford, a linebacker. What's going on in North Battleford that you went there? What do you see in those kids?
Well, number one, they were the provincial champs this year. So, you know, winners love being around winners. And so, you know, the last couple of years, we spent some time there doing some camps. And, you know, that energy's paid off. And you know, the head coach is one of my old players, so you certainly have some connections there. Coach Heumann, he does just a great job for North Battleford Vikings and minor football. He's just, they said, he's just one, you know, a great player. I love being around. He coached with me back in the day in high school. So, just a big fan, and to see how his players play, those are the guys we're looking for. And, you know, a lot of those kids are going to, you know, eventually become impact players with the Saskatoon Hilltops, and we're so blessed to have them. And as I said, so that part of our great recruiting year is the fact that North Belford players are coming our way.
And Melford players, too. Anson Stevenson, O-lineman. You got a D-lineman in Russell Usselman, and you got a linebacker in Connor Johnson. So Melford, pretty strong program there, looks like, too.
Oh, yeah, Melford's big time. And, you know, traditionally, a lot of those Melford players have gone to the Regina Thunder. So, you know, we sort of flipped the scale this year. And you know, as I said, all of them have big upsides. They're all excited to be in our program. And you know, our job, what people don't understand is one of the reasons we consistently seem to be in the games that anyone would want to be in is the job of my coaching staff and developing players. It's one thing, you know, I and a recruiting talent, the nice thing, once you get them in there, what do you do with them? And that's that coaching part, that's the developing part, the belief part. And, you know, hey, if they have strong work ethics, if they have that positive mindset, it's amazing where people are going to go. And so that high-end character players, especially those rural guys that we're talking about, North Belford and Melford, boy, they eventually become the heart of your programs.
Hey, you're also big with the Saskatoon guys, too, you know, the Holy Crosses and the Bishop James Mahoney and those type of schools. Does it help you being a principal in Saskatoon to keep an eye on these local guys?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I always make a point of going to watch my school, Walter Murray, their program. And, yeah, you get to see a lot of players play there. And so I've always made the point when, you know, if there's games on, you know, I'll be a little late for my press, whatever, because I want to be visible and I want to watch the future talent. And you know, Saskatoon's high-end football, just like Regina is. And you know, as I said, right now the players that seem to be coming into our programs understand what their roles are, and when they get their time to shine, they take advantage of that. And you know, as I said, our leaders did a great job last year, and now it's the leaders this year that got to continue the same type of traditions that have allowed us to flourish.
I love junior football. I played junior football, so I'm a big fan. I don't care if you win 4 championships in a row in junior football, CIS, tiddlywinks. You got to be doing something right. So let's talk about this for a second. Take us behind the recruiting curtain. First of all, what kind of player does Tom Sargent look for? Like, what's the first thing on your draft board? What are you looking for?
Well, the big thing that I talk about is I'm looking for hip benders, knee benders, and ankle benders. And I took this from the great Bear Bryant years ago. Just made sense to me. And I don't care what position you play, receiver, O-line, quarterback, you want to have sweet feet. So you want to make sure that when you have great feet, that allows you to get those mismatches, take advantage of that. Everyone can always say, hey, we look for character guys. Well, who are the character guys? I'm telling you who they are. They're the guys with the chips on their shoulders. So when you go recruit, there's blue chips. Mm-hmm. There's guys with chips on their shoulders. And I'm telling you, why do we win? I get a lot of guys that got chips on their shoulders. I just get out of their way, and you know what? They don't want to let you down. And as coaches, my staff doesn't want to let you down. So, you know, we got a couple simplistic things, but at the end of the day, you get into our program, into our facility, these coaches are going to coach you better than anyone else. That's it, and that is all.
Oh, that's a great pitch there. Do you prescribe to what Chris Jones looks at, for instance, and Eddie Steele? Eddie Steele was a D lineman, obviously, with the Manitoba Bisons, came up through Winnipeg, but D lineman, but they also use them in offensive lineman situations. He's looking for guys that can do different things, turn receivers into defensive linemen like Antigua and those type of guys. Do you look, when you're recruiting guys, you talk about their feet, but hey, I might be a receiver, but hey, I like his body type. He could be a defensive back.
Oh, no question. For example, this year, a quarterback who's in the mix competing for number 2, we moved him to this what we call a slam position. And I'm telling you, because what are quarterbacks? They got good IQs. They're smart. They understand the offense. We put him in the slam position, and we couldn't believe how physical he was. He was drilling guys, and it's like all of a sudden we had the courage to say, hey, what about this? Now this guy's a top 40 player. He's not competing for something. He's going to get quality playing time, and you know, he flipped his switch, and it's going to make our offense better. And no question, we've had a lot of success moving a running back to rush end or a D-line to O-line, you name it. You always got to be looking, how can this individual compete? Because at the end, ultimately, what do players want to do? They want to play and compete. So the sooner you get them on the field, the more you're going to get out of them.
Okay, so the slam position, is that like an H-back, kind of a tweener between a tight end and a slot, or a tight end and a fullback? What is that?
Yeah, so absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And you know, it's majority blocking, but there's some pass receiving attached to hit. And you know, ultimately, hey, now that you got a quarterback, hey, we might add some throw to it as well, you know, multi-purpose. So, hey, we'll keep scheming and dreaming to, you know, make more exciting plays for everyone to get excited about.
I know Frank and Bernie back in the day, in the junior days with the Rams, and even when they were coaching university, if the guy was kind of they were eyeing him for the quarterback position, they'd put him in the slot or at the receiver position because they could see the game through a receiver's eyes. And then when they transition to the quarterback position, they'd be that guy. They were doing that with Claremont, but then Claremont turned out to be this all Canadian receiver.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of you got to be like a kind of like a Swiss Army knife.
Oh, well, I coached against Claren. I know exactly. I wouldn't have played him anywhere else, but there, he was a man child out there.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I want to ask you this to wrap up. Now, this might seem like a bit of a strange question, but when a guy is coaching a team that's won 4 championships in a row and he's looking to fuel his team's fire, I know you look within, but you also got to look around the league and hope you have some competition. Let's just talk in Saskatchewan here for a second, because you talked about, you know, taking some players from traditionally maybe a Thunder hotbed where they took some guys. So you flipped the scales. So how important is it for you, for the Thunder, to keep pushing you in this province to kind of up that rivalry and make sure that it's kind of, you know, right there with you? Because they've been nipping at your heels. They just haven't been able to climb that mountain yet on you.
Oh, they've been everything. Absolutely. Coach McCall and his staff do a phenomenal job. they know us better than we know them. You can tell they put in all that time and energy. They coach great against us. They do the right things. And, you know, every year we have this steak night, and they always make us look bad. I think we've lost the last couple of years, old son of a gun. So, you know, when I throw on game film in the off season, it's the Regina Thunder. I'm looking to see what they're doing, what they're doing against us. As I said, they self-scout us just amazing and makes us better. And you know, hey, even last year, that game was nip and tuck. We've been fortunate at times. Football, you got to get some good breaks, some good luck, and that's right now that's in our favor. And but when you get them, you got to take advantage of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you throw it all the records aside, you throw everything out. When it's us and Regina, you just know it's going to be great football, and they bring out the best in us, and hopefully we bring out the best in them.
Okay, two more quick questions for you, Tom. So what would you do to sell a kid who's listening to this podcast on junior football? Because sometimes junior football gets a knock. Well, it's not university, it's junior football. That whole junior football thing kind of is a negative stereotype. Why should somebody come play junior football, just in general?
Okay, when I hear that's just ridiculous. Number one, you know what? There's great coaches that coach junior football. Every coach that I go against in Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Regina, they're awesome people and they run great programs. Number two, for example, I sent two players to the Riders. I can get people to the program quicker than anyone else. I think there's up to 48 draft slots now. As I said, I got two players that were performing there. I know Scott McCauley gets some of his guys there. At the end of the day, if you're a high-level football player, you just want to get to the show. Mm-hmm. You just want to get to show your stuff. I know the Wildcats, the Colts, they're able to send players to those camps as well. So way different opportunity than CIS. You don't need to get drafted to go there. And I think the most important thing is, you know what, it's you got directors, people that rally around. The game is so pure in junior football that, you know what, you don't have to be anything more than what you are, and to develop – get 7 years to play the game out of high school. I've seen so many players go jump into a CIS roster and they just get buried. Because ultimately, who's phoning me? It's the CIS coaches. They're the ones that want my 21. Tommy Sessler is going to UBC.
Yeah.
And so he bypassed. He went to Ryder Camp last year. He's at UBC. They're considered one of the top programs around. So, you know what? Other people would have got bypassed in those situations. You have to be clear enough and have enough confidence to see what's in front, because the way we run our program, I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's butt. But that's all that I've seen too many times at the CIS. They tell people what they want to hear, but then they can't deliver. They don't develop these players like a junior program does. Bottom line.
That's a good statement there from the guy who wins for sure 4 championships in a row. And lastly, you mentioned directors. I know the Thunder here were very lucky to get Murad Al-Khatib on board with AGT, and he's drumming up interest here. And they've always had a good, solid board here with Bryn Ware and all those guys. And you mentioned they're good coaching staff. You guys do too. But I want to talk about the fact you have a little bit of a changing of the guard there in terms of your facility. Nice little upgrade there for you guys. Talk about that.
Oh, it's just amazing. Al Gibb, Dale Newman, and the directors just did a phenomenal job. And now we got this Taj Mahal, 91 stalls, so I can have more players. And every stall is exactly the same. You know, you got the film with the smart board. I got to go to a flipping meeting and work on how to figure out a smart board and all this fancy stuff now. So I don't know if I'll get through that. But the best part in the coaches' room, great coaches' room, you know, they were kind enough. A lot of the alumni heard we were belly aching. So now after a cold winter's night, we can jump into a steam room and just sort of debrief the day. So, you know, as I said, it's just an amazing facility. We're so proud to be a part of it now, and we need to honor it and continue to play great football. That's the biggest reason this thing was built in the first place.
That's right. You win on the field as champions. You're treated like champions, and the Hilltops are deserving of that. That's their head coach, Tom Sargent. Thanks, Sarge.
Hey, appreciate it. Good visiting. Take care, bud.
All right, bud. Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair here in Regina, 2337th Avenue. And Wheel Estate, Canada's most trusted peer-to-peer trailer sharing marketplace. Check them out at wheelestate.ca. Also want to give a shout-out to Murad and Michelle Al-Khatib, big supporters of this podcast as well. So thanks to them for their support, not only this podcast, but football in Regina and surrounding area. And I know Michelle Al-Khatib is on the Regina Riot board, also involved with the Thunder, which we talked about with Tom Sargent. But Michelle's big into the Riot football program. And hey, we're going to talk Riot football right now. All right, our guest here on Growing the Game now is Allie Bell from the Regina Riot. How are you, Allie?
I'm good. Thanks, Ballsy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's great to talk to you. I heard you're kind of crazy. Somebody told me, Rochelle told me you're kind of crazy. How, do you agree with that?
I'll agree with that.
Okay, so how are you kind of crazy?
When I'm on the field, I guess my attitude and my temperament is a little bit different than when I'm off the field.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could say I turn into kind of an a-hole.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got to kind of be that way to play. You often hear, it doesn't matter if it's girls or guys, you hear them being polite, nice people off the field. But when they get on the field, they kind of flip a switch. That's what you'd say you do?
That's exactly what I do. I put my helmet on and I'm a whole different person.
So what kind of, how do you visualize? How do you get into that mindset?
I do a lot of visualization before the game. Our coach Olivier has us have kind of like a moment of silence for those who want to pray. I just kind of close my eyes and I visualize being as tough and mean as possible, and now that I'm on the O-line, I visualize pancaking all the D-line that I can, and yeah.
Did you just make the switch to O-line?
I just made the switch to O-line. I played O-line for Saskatoon 2 years ago. I switched back to D-line, which was my original position when I started playing last year, and then we had a few girls from the O-line that got injured this year, so I got moved there again.
All right, so let's rewind here a bit because people are just getting familiar with Allie Bell here. So how did you get started in football?
I got started in football. I actually got recruited when I was up in Saskatoon. I was working out at the PAC gym at the university,
mm-hmm.
and I had a girl come up to me and ask if I wanted to try playing football. It's something that I've always wanted. It's kind of in my blood. It runs in my family. So I said, sure, and here we are today.
So you're a Moose Jaw girl. You went to the Saskatoon, played for the Valkyries, and then you come to the Regina Riot. What made you come to Regina? Was it a job? Was it to play football for the Riot?
It was a job. I came for work. I was done university, decided I needed to put my big girl pants on.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved a little bit closer to home, found a job, and, of course, my decision to play for the Riot wasn't a hard one. I wanted to keep playing football, and I was lucky enough that they had an elite program here as well.
Okay, so talk to me about your football background in terms of your family. You say it runs in the family blood. Tell us.
It runs in my family blood. My dad played. My dad played a little bit of university. He also played a little bit of Hilltop. My cousin is John Ryan, who punts for the Seahawks. And then I have a bunch of other cousins who played for the Thunder, the Rams, Concordia, that kind of thing.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Okay, so what do you like best about football?
What do I love best about football? I love that there's a position for everybody, and I love that we're allowed to, like, physically hit people. Like, in girls' sports growing up, I was never allowed to actually have contact. So here I am, and it's so much fun, and it's so awesome. It's tons of fun, and it's also super fun just kind of to say that I'm a girl, and, hey, I play 12v12, full pads, tackle football.
So what do you like better, the offensive line or the D-line?
The D-line.
So you're doing this out of necessity right now for the Riot because of injury?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm adjusting well to the O-line. I'm having a ton of fun doing it, so I have no complaints. But I do like the D-line better. I love being able to try and sack the quarterback and hit as many people as I can.
Okay, so center position. That's a key position. That's the quarterback of the offensive line. Has that been hard to pick up?
Yes. It takes a lot of adjusting for me. I'm a backup center right now. I've got Trish in front of me, who's a great center, and she's done a ton of really awesome coaching with me too. Getting my snaps consistent has taken me pretty much all season, as well as learning how to be aware of where the linebackers are compared to who's blitzing and where all my D-line is. It's been a hard adjustment, but it's been fun to learn.
My name's Ballsy because I'll ask any question, okay? So I'm going to tread lightly in our new world about how I ask this question, okay? But when, you know...
Oh, Ballsy, I got no secret.
Okay, so when you're thinking about women playing football, some guys might think, well, that's not very feminine. It might be kind of... it might be kind of against your femininity. How do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I tell them, like, F you. Seriously. Girls who play football, I don't care what you think of them. I think they're really, really cool. I think they're really, really strong. Like, the whole team, even the Saskatoon team, all the girls that I've ever played football with,
mm-hmm.
are tough. They're strong. They're physically strong. They're mentally strong. They spend all year in the gym. They spend all year learning the playbook, training hard. We're athletes.
Yeah.
So if you're going to call us, like, not feminine, like, I don't care.
Yeah. No, that's good. I love your spirit. Okay. So you guys just recently knocked off Saskatoon again, and you clinched the playoff.
Yeah.
You clinched the playoff spot. You clinched first, so your playoff game is June 17th. Do we know who you're playing that day?
We don't yet. It's either going to be Edmonton or Lethbridge, I believe.
Okay, cool. So how do you, you obviously match up good with all these teams. You got a pretty strong, what makes your program, the Regina Ride, so strong?
Our coaches, 100%. We've got the best coaches. We've also got a ton of athletes who come from, like, very, very high-performance sports backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So we've got retired, like, CIS hockey players, rugby players, basketball, volleyball, you name it, we've got it. Our athletes work hard, too. They're super passionate, super dedicated. Like I said, they train in the gym in the off season. They learn the playbooks. They want to succeed. And that's kind of what makes us so elite. And our coaches push us even harder. So
who's your favorite football player to watch?
My favorite football player to watch is Clay Matthews on the Green Bay Packers.
Who, by the way, just broke his nose in a charity softball game.
That.
Yeah, smashed in the nose. What's the worst football injury you've ever had?
The worst football injury I've ever had? Probably the hematoma I've got on my shin right now.
Oh, that hurts, eh?
Yeah, it's a big one.
What do you do in your day job?
I work for Ranchero.
Okay, cool.
I'm a youth worker there.
Okay, cool. And it sounds like you'd be good at that, just judging by this interview. Okay, so we talked NFL. Who's your favorite CFL guy to watch? Is there a favorite rider you like to watch or a CFL
Daron
player?
Daron Carter.
You like Daron. What do you like about Daron?
Man, he's so, like, he plays both offense and defense, and he succeeds at both. Like, he's an all-around athlete.
Yeah.
I love his celebrations. I love the vibe that he brings to the team. I love that he can get everyone pumped up. Like, he is just, like, an all-around great athlete.
If I'm not mistaken, that game against the Valkyries that you won, wasn't that your first game at the new Mosaic Stadium? Am I right about that?
That was our first game at the new Mosaic. You're right.
And how cool was that?
Oh my God, that was so cool. It was so much fun. I mean, obviously, we don't have the fans like the Riders have, but just being in the stadium, being on the field in that atmosphere was, like, mind-blowing. It was so cool.
Okay, so you got 20 seconds left here to sell your team and why people should come out and watch that playoff game on June 17th at Mosaic Stadium. Why should they come watch the Riot?
The Regina Riot is by far the best women's football program in the country, by far. No questions asked. We have the best coaches, the best athletes. We play physical. We hit hard. If you come and watch us, you will not be disappointed.
All right, and come watch the crazy Ally Bell and the Regina Riot. Thanks for this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Baldy.
And the 34th installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy rolling right along, thanks to our great sponsors, Mako Collision Repair and Wheel Estate. Go check out Mako at 2337th Avenue in Regina, and Wheel Estate at wheelestate.ca. They're Canada's most trusted peer-to-peer trailer sharing marketplace. Couple of things to get to before we wrap this episode up. First off, I want to talk U of R Rams here. Now, Nick Daly, their outstanding defensive lineman last year, in the offseason, kind of tumultuous. He was off the team, then he was on the team, and now he has left the team to continue his football career on the left coast. He's in Kelowna with the Okanagan Son of the BC Junior Football League, so good luck to Nick Daly. His brother Dom, of course, excelling as a receiver in his final year with the Leboldus Golden Sun. So we look forward to seeing what Nick can do on the football field here in Regina. Now, speaking of the Rams, a couple of new recruits for them is Steve Bryce and his coaching staff had a great recruiting class this year. Josh White from the Campbell Tartan provincial winning football championship team, and Jackson Ford, also of the Campbell Tartans, now members of the Rams. They will join one of their teammates, Tanner Schmeichel, playing for Team Canada, the U19 team in the International Bowl in Mexico City, Mexico. That'll take place in July. That'll be hot, and the action will be hotly contested on the field. So good luck to those three representatives from the University of Regina Rams. All right, time to talk to Darian Durant with our weekly segment, The Doubles Take. How are you today, Doubles?
Doing great.
Awesome.
How's everything?
Yeah, everything's good, man. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to see much or gain much from the Riders' first preseason game, but we're headed into preseason game number two against the Calgary Stampeders. As a quarterback yourself, a veteran guy, how much did you want to play here in this second preseason game?
Well, you want to play as long as you can in that second one, especially the starters. A lot of the starters didn't get an opportunity to play last week. That game was more so for the young guys to kind of show what they can do. show that they're getting a grasp of the CFL game. So, you know, this is the last week of fine-tuning. So as a starter, you want to get out there and play as much as you can going into the regular season.
Okay, so I'm going to get to the quarterbacking situation in a second. But, Darian, in your experience, without being here front and center with the Riders on this edition of the team, how much of the team is already picked as we come into this this last game? Is it 80%? Like, can you put a ballpark on that for me?
It's tough to put a percentage on it. I think that the majority of the guys who've been there last year, especially if you played a huge role in, you know, the success of the team, those guys are pretty much set. For the younger guys, especially the ones who come in and open the coach's eyes from day one of training camp, those are the guys who have a great opportunity to make the team. You'll see some of them probably get in and out a little bit early in the game with the starters to kind of see how they mesh, see if they can fit in with the guys who are probably going to make the team. So most of the starters and the guys who played a significant role, they have their spot on the team, and there's also a couple spots for some young guys as well. So it's a great opportunity for everyone.
Hey, let me take you back to 2008 when a little guy named Weston Dressler came out of the practice field and turned some heads. What the hell was Darian Durant thinking there?
Man, I mean, when you look at him in meetings, you're like, okay, you know, he's a smaller guy. You know he's there for a reason, but, you know, you say that it's a long shot just because of his size. But, you know, once Weston hit the field, you saw him run his first route. You saw him just running by DBs who have been in the league a while. You're like, man, this guy belongs. So it was definitely a great thing to watch. And there are going to be some guys just like Weston who are very small. But, you know, they don't. You look at them and you don't think much of them. But once they hit the field, you're like, this guy belongs. So you'll see that this year for sure.
You're the perfect guy to ask this. Zach Collaros comes in here, and it's just a preseason game. But it's not just a preseason game in Saskatchewan, as you know. And it's not just a preseason game for Zach Collaros, who a lot of people are watching. What do you think he's going through?
Well, I'm pretty sure he has a lot going on mentally. You know, coming from a new team, especially when last year didn't go as well as he would have liked. They didn't get in the win column with him starting last year. So I feel like Zach has a lot to prove. And then with Brandon Bridge coming along and having a little bit of success last year, getting into that playoff game, just getting a taste of what big-time football is all about. You know, he's chomping at the bit to get out there and to have an opportunity to lead a team. So, you know, there's a little bit of pressure on Zach for sure, but he's a veteran in this league. He's a guy that's had a lot of success. So I'm sure he'll be ready mentally, but at the same time, competition should bring out the best in both of those guys, and I think you'll see the best of those guys, not only just this preseason, but throughout the entire season.
Okay, so put us in his shoes for a second. As Darian Durant in place of Zach Collaros, we'll use the example. Did you want to take that first hit first, or did you want to get that first little completion, like five-yarder, to get you into the game?
You kind of want to get that first completion. I mean, you're nervous. It's been a while. It's been 6-7 months since you played in a live football game. Palms may be sweaty a little bit, so you just want to get the ball out, get that first completion going, and then you can worry about the hits. The hits are going to come. I mean, you don't have to worry about that, but the thing you want to do is get that first completion. You don't want to put yourself in second and long early in a game, especially in that first series. So getting that first completion is very important, and I'm pretty sure those guys feel the same way.
Who did you look to when you're in Rider colors for that first completion? Who was your security blanket?
Matt Dominguez. You know, when I, you know, coming up, you know, he's a guy that was very sure-handed. It didn't matter if he was open by three steps or if the guy was, you know, draped all over him. He's a guy that you felt comfortable getting the ball to. So Matt was definitely a security blanket for myself and early on in my career. And, you know, he made it easy for me for sure.
From what you see of Brandon Bridges' game, what does he need to do to take that next step and be considered a bona fide starter in this league?
I think the thing you're looking for from Brandon is just consistency. You know what, early on in his career, he kind of struggled a little bit with his delivery. You know, he was kind of off balance a little bit, and that led to some inaccurate throws. But I actually trained a little bit with Brandon this offseason, you know, while I was up in Toronto. And he's putting in the work. He's very dedicated to his craft. And you can see that as a guy matures and understands the situation he's in with his team. So, you know, I've seen so much growth in Brandon. I think he has a great opportunity ahead of him. if he just stays humble. I mean, I was a guy who had to sit back for 3 years and wait it out and learn the game. He's sat a couple years now, so I'm pretty sure he's ready to just take off.
But let me ask you this question. I know he played down in the United States at a lower-ranked college, but, you know, it's funny. In the Canadian Football League, for certain spots, Canadians have the inside track, offensive line, linebackers, maybe receivers. But you got to be – don't you have to be that much better at the quarterback spot if you're Canadian? Do you feel that?
No question. I mean, if you just look at the history of the league, not a lot of Canadians even just get the opportunity to play. You know, he's defied those odds already. Not only has he pretty much played in a lot of games as a Canadian, but he's been in a position to start as well. And, you know, like you said, a lot of Canadians don't get that opportunity. So he's doing a great job of just, you know, making a path for Canadian quarterbacks coming up. And he's still such a young guy, man. He has an opportunity to just sit back and learn from some of the greats. He was with myself. He was with Kevin Glenn. He had a chance to learn from Anthony Calvillo. And now he's in the quarterback room with Zach Calero. So he's been around so many quarterbacks who've had a lot of success in this league. He's learned a lot. And, you know, like I said, he's ready for his opportunity to step up and lead a team.
Last question, Darian. Now, from a professional's vantage point, what do you want from the Riders today if you're watching this game besides the score? I mean, who cares? What are you hoping for as you walk out of this game?
The main thing you're looking for is just chemistry. You don't want to see any blown coverages. You want to, as far as defensively, no blown coverages. You want to make sure everyone is where they're supposed to be at all times. You just want to see the team build on what they ended with last year. You know, they were a couple plays away from a Grey Cup appearance. You know, that team, they have every position as far as personnel goes in place. You just want to see the camaraderie. And then offensively, you want to see if Zach is comfortable in the new system with those new receivers. He has weapons all across the board. You want to make sure he's comfortable, put him in good situations, and don't make it too difficult. And when you're looking at who they're playing in Calgary, their starters are probably going to get a decent amount of playing time as well. So you just want to see how the team stacks up against one of the teams who's always going to compete for first place in the West. They're one of the most consistent teams over the past 10 years, probably in CFL history. So you just want to see where they stack up, see if the guys from last year can come in and pick up where they left off. And it gives you a great measuring stick.
Great insight from one of the greats who ever played for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, Darian Durant. Thanks, Doubles.
Thank you, man.
Time now for Paul and Ball on Football here on the Growing the Game podcast. Paul Waldo joining us here. We'll get to the real estate game in a minute, but let's get to football matters. And tell you what, we've always said this, Paul, you almost need two quarterbacks to make it all the way through. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were walking a tightrope when Darian Durant left. And I'm wondering if they're going to call Darian back, although as we tape this interview, they haven't, because I just talked to Durant. They haven't got a hold of him. But Matt Nichols goes down in practice, clutching his right knee. Don't know the extent of the injury, but it didn't look too good, but judging by his expression. He threw his helmet on the ground. So if that's the case, the Bomber season could implode. And you know that very well, because you were on a team that was rolling until Durant got hurt.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this numerous times, Paul, and you need two quarterbacks to be successful. Regardless, at one point in time, you're going to have to lean on both of them, right? I always say the one and the 1A, if you want to classify it, or 1A, 1B, whatever terminology or analogy you want to use, you need to, obviously, in a situation like this, especially if it's a significant knee injury where it's going to be a season-ending situation. So, you know, you hope that Matt Nichols isn't hurt, done for the year. Well, I do. I mean, as a player, obviously, you never want to see that happen. So they could be in tough.
So if you're Chris Jones, would you trade Brandon Bridge? What would it take you to let Brandon Bridge go, especially to a division rival? Because everybody's talking about that right now.
You know what? I mean, I think if you're a team that needs some sort of depth at different positions, and you feel like you can trade a number one quarterback like a Brandon Bridge, because he's not your number one, and fill the pieces that you need, I think you're okay. But in this situation where the Riders, you know, have some pretty solid depth, I think, you know, certainly everywhere minus maybe the offensive line, they could use another guy or two. I know it's tough to give up a guy like Brandon Bridge because he has so much promise. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, correct me, Ballsy, because you'll know this, but Zach Collaros is 0-16 in his last 16 games.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of it in whatever way you want to look at it. So I don't think you can deal Brandon Bridge quite yet.
I wonder if Durant does get a call. Do you think Winnipeg calls him, or do you think because he took the 70 and left, they won't bother? And then you got to think about around the league. What does Edmonton have after Kevin Glenn? If Edmonton wants to bolster their coffers, they could deal Kevin Glenn there.
They could, yeah. Well, I mean, on the Durant situation, I think this is when they call him back and they say, hey, it's time to earn the money we gave you. You know, and I think that's probably what Winnipeg was really upset about more so than anything. I don't think the 70 grand, that's chump change, it's pocket change to him, but the fact that a situation like this, you know, could happen at any point in the season, yet won't happen before you even open up week one. You know, I think that's a potential. I think they potentially on the side somebody gives him a ring eventually once they get the extent of his injury.
Do you think Darian Durant, if it does go down like we think it's going to go down, and Nichols is done, do you think Darian Durant would come back? Do you think he walked away mainly because he just couldn't stomach being a backup quarterback?
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, I think the signs point towards it. I mean, you know, you moved on, you're a different chapter in your life. You know, you got a brand new baby on the way. You're moving to a different team and organization that you've never probably foresee yourself being in, and you're moving into a backup role. So I think it's a different situation right now. I'll tell you, I don't know who they have, backing up Matt Nichols right now.
Well, they had Brian Bennett, I think, they brought into camp.
Yeah,
there's like five quarterbacks in camp, but nobody of that ilk, for sure.
No, nobody. I mean, nobody that has half the experience. I mean, the Devils have a lot more experience than all of them put together, and is probably still in, I would think, better football shape than probably those guys from an actual, you know, offensive standpoint where he has the experience that could probably lead them. It'll be interesting.
As we went to tape this interview, Paul, I was just before talking to you, I talked to Nick Lewis, and of course he's tied into the Alouettes, and he told me John Bowman was hurt today too. I don't know the extent of that injury, but you played with John Bowman. This guy is kind of like a fine wine. He gets better. They're trying to get rid of him, but he keeps coming back. You'd hate to see a great career end on an injury, but I guess that's the nature of the game.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the way it goes sometimes, obviously playing with John for a very long time. Not only is he matured into a great player, but matured into a really good dude, and he's a huge leader. He's just a guy that bolsters their talent, their experience, their leadership by miles. And then that's obviously why they have him there. Are there better pass rushers in the league? Well, probably. But like I said, he's still up there. He continues to get better, and he's still productive. And, you know, same reason why I think they signed Chip Cox, I think, yesterday or the day before, to once again have that leadership, that continuity in that locker room that they're missing.
What are you looking for from the Riders here against Calgary on Friday?
I'm just looking for, the ones to obviously get some decent amount of time and to get out there and to look more fluid, I think, to look more crisp. I mean, I don't expect them to go out there and score, you know, a bazillion points and win the game by 40, but you just want them to show signs of a team that could potentially run away with the West Division.
I'm looking defensively, and you're a defensive guy. Better tackling. I didn't like the tackling, and I guess I think that was a residual effect of, you know, one week, and then you're playing your first game. But it's going to be nice to see now they had a week under their belts with the green and white game, just to see how they're going to do here tackling-wise.
Absolutely. I mean, tackling, I mean, it's one of those fundamentals where you can't really practice as often because there's a physical component to it that probably harms people sometimes more than it does good, and that hence the CBA coming in and eliminating the physical contact, the practice, the pad, the practices, right? But with that being said, the only way you can actually fundamentally become sound in tackling is actually tackling. So with 5 days into training camp, it's tough. You're really not hitting anybody, and you haven't really had your chance. You haven't had the chance to evaluate yourself hitting somebody. So now they've had the time to look at the tape. It's been a week and some change, and so I expect it to be a lot more crispier fundamentally.
Okay, so buddy, where do you weigh in on this? Good or bad for the league that they're capping the football operations expenditures?
I think it's good. I mean, they cap the players. Why don't you cap the coaches?
Yeah.
It makes sense, doesn't it? Especially in a league where we talk about not having the disposable funds, why guarantee? It's bad enough already that their coaches' contracts are guaranteed and the players not. So why not cap their situation? And and create some sort of parity, you know, and that's just kind of my opinion, obviously, with my player's helmet on.
Yeah.
To me, it is what it is.
My only thing is to grow the game. You want to attract really good coaches, and we're getting guys, even though they're older, the June Joneses, the Jerry Glanvilles, they've forgotten more about football than other people know. To get these kind of guys to come up to the CFL, you got to pay, you know, the Mark Trestmans to come back, you got to pay them some money. So, you know, just to develop the game, I wonder how it's going to affect the game and the coaching.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, that's no lie, but I mean, there's obviously a reason that they're trying to do it, and I think what it does is, you know, Mark Trestman can still get paid what he gets paid, but then somebody else is going to take less.
Right.
That's the unfortunate portion of the business. We always want to talk about the business, and that's the same excuse that they give players for letting.
And maybe Mark Trestman or Chris Jones have to do more for the money they're making, right?
There you go. Yeah, and then that's exactly it. So at the end of the day, I mean, you know, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think, you know, Chris is close to 500 or
over
you know,
that. Yeah.
Actually, he's over 500. So, I mean, and then same with Mark. So I definitely don't feel bad for him. You know, I'm not losing sleep over the coaches having to deal with the cap situation. I can tell you that much.
Okay, Paul, where can they find you in the real estate game? And before they do that, you got a deal that people can look at this week or a hot deal for us?
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of houses. I mean, you know, houses, condos. Anything that you're looking for, you know, starting at prices from $200,000 all the way up to $800,000. And you can reach me at paul@homesregina.ca, or you can call me at 306-502-5355. You can jump online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat with the Home Expert team.
And I want to ask you this about real estate. So is this a good, like right here, this window here, is this the good time to put your house up for sale? Like, do you want to get it on the market before summer? How does that work?
Absolutely. I mean, you want to get it. We're very weather-driven, weather-indicative of our market. Obviously, you know, we had a snowfall in the first week of April, if I'm not mistaken, that big dump, and that kind of killed momentum. And now things are starting to get nicer. The weather's starting to get really, really nice out, and people don't like stomping through snow in April to view homes, right? So, like I said, this is a great time. It's the market is heating up, and it's hot right now, so it's a great time to list.
Well, you want to get your home sold, talk to this guy, Paul Waldo, 502-5355. And that brings to a close another edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you'd like to have a story right here on this podcast, please email me, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. And our sponsor list is growing, too. If you'd like to sponsor the show and help grow the game of football in Saskatchewan, a game we all love, you can email me at the same address, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com, or get a hold of me, 306-526-7979. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Mako Collision Repair and also Wheel Estate. Check out Mako Collision Repair, 2337th Avenue, and Wheel Estate at wheelestate.ca. We'll talk to you next week.